Okay, so we're recording.
I guess it's a storyteller and a historian walk into a trading company.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You are listening to Storyboard 30 from Storyboard Memphis and from FM 89.3 WYPL and the Memphis Public Libraries.
I challenge anybody to find a business anywhere in this country that's been in business since 1876. In particular, something that's independently owned.
This building is the only building that's what it's still original. If we had sold out, Beale Street would be leveled.
The whole story of urban renewal and how Beale Street, part of the reason it is still here and survived is because of A. Schwab in a big way. And so this place is much bigger than the building.
This is Beale Street, Memphis, Tennessee, the year 2021. Neon lights popping and flashing, tourists milling about in all directions, their eyes darting around at all the sights and sounds, and live music blasting out of every other open door. And this is Beale Street, the year 1921. It was, as legendary Beale Streeter Nat D. Williams said, the melting pot of Black America. It was the only place to be. More than a collection of stores and saloons, pawn shops and lodge halls and church headquarters, Beale was Main Street and Back Alley and the Rialto and Courthouse Square. Christians, hypocrites, heathens, gamblers, the upright and the uptight, harlots and mothers of the church, professional men in their black suits and dark ties. And sitting right in the middle of all of it, for a century and a half, has been A. Schwab's Dry Goods and General Store. So hello again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30, and our premiere episode of Storyboard 30, the A. Schwab Basement Tapes, with your hosts Mark Fleischer and Caroline Carrico, where we take you listeners along with us for Storyboard's complete A. Schwab archive project, unboxing, uncovering, and discovering the untold histories of this 145-year-old Memphis landmark. This premiere episode is brought to you by our project sponsor, A. Schwab General Store and Soda Fountain. A. Schwab has been in continuous operation since 1876 right here in Memphis, Tennessee, is of course located on historic Beale Street, and stands by their longtime slogan, "If you can't find it at Schwab's, you're better off without it." The A. Schwab Basement Tapes, Episode 1, The Project Begins.
Now, just so you know, I'm going to be recording everything that we do. Because you never know what we get. That you're like, oh, I wish I had that recorded.
Yes.
So.
Hi, it's good to see you.
And. So just if you remember, we want to have like a series of conversations with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we don't expect you to sit down and try to recount every single thing, and
my brain will freeze up.
That's exactly. Yeah. Okay, so where are we going? Cool. Okay, here we go.
Maybe down there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? I'm sure. Where are we going? I don't know. Gotta go down there anyway.
That's Elliot Schwab, the great-great-grandson of Abraham Joseph Schwab, who opened the store in 1876. Elliot has known the store his entire life, from crawling around on its original hardwood floors, to working with store customers, manning the soda fountain, handling its vast inventory in the basement, and, of course, telling its stories.
Nobody was forced off the street. Everybody was coerced off the street. By either building a new building for them or getting the owners to sell the property, just that. They came in, they condemned the building. Put a sign on the door, locked the door, it's condemned. They uncondemned us the next day. You uncondemn something. And they threatened us. Everything they told us we had to do, we did it. Exit signs, added new electrical, updated this, updated that, except the plumbing. We never had hot water in here until 2012.
A. Schwab Dry Goods and Soda Fountain. It has survived and witnessed almost two-thirds of our history. The 1918 pandemic, Jim Crow segregation, the Great Depression, two world wars, the decline of Beale Street and civil rights unrest of the 1960s, and it ultimately became the leading holdout during the now infamous downtown urban renewal projects in the late 1960s, refusing to sell out when the Memphis Housing Authority began its demolition of Beale Street. Why is the A. Schwab story so important? And how did a dry goods store, founded by a Jewish immigrant, become an anchor in the middle of the black community? Was it luck? Savvy? Stubbornness? Some of that Memphis hoodoo? Or was it empathy and tolerance? Well, Storyboard's A. Schwab Archive Project aims to address all of it. Join us. So here we are.
Yes, we are.
We are at A. Schwab's. And I never really know to say A. Schwab or A. Schwab's. What do you say?
I say A. Schwab.
Yeah.
No apostrophe S.
Because on the sign outside, it says A. Schwab, right?
I honestly don't remember. I feel like this is something we have to solve early on.
But maybe that's our first task, is to determine... What do we call it?
First research question. What do we call our project?
Yeah. And then there have been times where I've said, I wanted to call it a drugstore.
Oh, yeah.
because of the soda fountain.
Yeah.
Because, drugstores had soda fountains. So I do that, but it was never a drugstore.
Right.
Right.
In the traditional sense.
Not in the traditional sense. There is a back alley after all. So we are upstairs. We're in the event space, next door to the Memphis Music Room, or the Memphis Music
Collection. Record store.
Record store. Yeah.
Literal records.
Yeah. And so we should remind you that I am Mark Fleischer, host of Storyboard 30 and founder of Storyboard Memphis. And
I'm Caroline Carrico. I'm the manager of programs for Storyboard Memphis and associate editor for Storyboard Memphis Quarterly magazine.
So this is our first episode of what is officially going to be Storyboard 30, the A. Schwab basement tapes.
I like that you dropped your voice there.
Yeah,
the A. Schwab tapes.
The A. Schwab basement tapes. And although we probably will find physical tape down there, it's probably of the masking tape kind versus...
I really hope so.
Yeah.
I really don't want to deal with that.
If there are any actual tapes down there, that would be something.
It would be. That would be its whole own opportunity to learn new skills.
Walking down into the basement, we're given a first look at where Caroline and the archive team will be spending much of their time. And, we learn, there are two adjoining basements, one under the original 163 Beale, and the other under the former 165 Beale, once home to one of the city's first Piggly Wiggly grocery stores. One well-lit, organized like a storeroom, housing inventory and old displays, and boxes of archival records for our project. The other, an almost cave-like space like that of an old wine cellar, of century-old and uneven stone floors and brick walls, a catacomb of 100-year-old farming equipment, wagon wheels and carts, wash tubs, barrels, bread boxes, a museum unto itself, a step back into the 1870s, 1880s, and a turn-of-the-century river town. But for now, we are working in the inventory space and looking over pallet after pallet and shelf after shelf of boxes with handwritten markings Receipts, 1943 to 1945. Orders, 1948 to 1953. Loose papers, 1925. And so on.
So I don't know, what do you think you want to start with?
So, okay, just give you some context. I've been working with Jamie Corson at the library. She's got a process for how they need files saved and everything. Okay. And so I'm planning on taking a box to the library and working through her whole process. So that way, when we have an intern or somebody, when we have another hire, I can explain, I know what the process is.
Okay.
And we're also going to, in the next issue of the quarterly, so issue 2, we're gonna have, like, start having stories about Schwab. And
so, that'd be cool.
Using whatever I find in this first box, essentially. So
we got our first tour of the basement, right?
Which was, frankly, way better than I was expecting.
Yeah.
I kind of had these horror images in my head of what we were going to be walking into. Most people are not archivists, so it's probably safe to assume that most people don't know a lot about storage. Most people probably do know that basements are not the ideal place to store priceless documents.
Right.
So I was so nervous about what we were going to find. And Terry Cox, which is a different Terry from Terry Saunders. Terry Cox is the general manager of Schwab.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be very specific about who we're talking about.
Yeah.
So Terry had told me later on that she was so concerned about how they were stored. And frankly, they had done the absolute best you can do to have them in a basement. They were up off the floor. They were wrapped and protected. The temperature is constant because they store merchandise. And so it was much better. But oh my gosh, there's so many boxes. There are, my best estimate is 98 banker's boxes full of who knows what. But, and that's just my math based on counting and multiplying, and I could be off.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I mean,
you guys clearly did a ton of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he and Matt did most of it. And
this was 100 times better. 1,000 times better than what we had.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was telling Mark that I had nightmare scenarios in mind when he originally told me everything was in the basement, and then I saw this and I was like, oh, it's a lot, but it's
we kind of did the part that
been
you were
cared for.
You were gonna walk into.
You did, yes. Yeah, which is so helpful.
But no, the reason we saved it, in case the tax man comes and says, "What do you see?" He says, "There you go. Look for it."
We need 1892. Okay, so does that sound good to you? So let me start by just taking a box and figuring out how long it takes me to do that one, and then try to figure out how many boxes there are. That's
roughly 20 boxes per pallet.
Okay.
As we looked at these boxes, you know, I took a few pictures down there, and you know, some are dated, you know, like 1940s, but many go back even further.
Right.
Right. Now, to make sure that we're giving full credit where credit is due, Terry Saunders, owner, has had a few folks at least wrap up some of the materials in such a state. Would you say?
I'd say so. There have been other people who have worked on this project before.
Yeah.
There's some people who have done some basic cataloging, which is where you go through each box and make a notation of what's in there. It's on the top of the box, which is amazingly helpful. Bridget Bildereau and a couple of her colleagues from the University of Tennessee at Knoxville did a community archives project with this and laid a great foundation. The difference with what we are going to be doing, what we're talking about, is the length of time we have. So these other projects didn't have the time or resources to do a full accounting of the archives and full digitization. So a bunch of groundwork has already been laid for us, which we've found out since this first meeting, which is hugely helpful. So we owe a debt to the people who have come before us.
You're listening to Storyboard 30, the A. Schwab Basement Tapes. Coming up.
Stories about this place that are housed in all these people around the world, not just in Memphis.
But the stories, you know, every day that passes, we lose some of that history.
Yeah.
Episode 1 of Storyboard 30's A. Schwab Basement Tapes are sponsored by A. Schwab General Store, located, of course, in downtown Memphis at 163 Beale Street. Remember, if you can't find it at A. Schwab's, you're better off without it. But while you are there, you'll want to pick up a copy of Storyboard's newly relaunched magazine, Storyboard Memphis Quarterly. Storyboard Memphis Quarterly is available at a few select Memphis locations, including A. Schwab. Pick one up. We are certain you'll be better off with it. As the publisher of Storyboard, I came to this through a board member who told me, you need to talk to Terry Saunders. Now, for you listeners, Terry Saunders and Company, you know, Terry is the current owner of A. Schwab. She has owned A. Schwab for just over 10 years, and she is the first non-Schwab now to be part of the ownership of the store. And I finally met Terry in June of 2021.
Where was I?
Authenticity. Yeah, and I was like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
Stuff is
right.
Literally the things that are here. But then the stories about this place that are housed in all these people around the world.
Uh-huh.
Not just in Memphis. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I was touring the basement with, a blues musician. Maybe he was in his late 70s. Several years ago, mm-hmm. 7-8 years ago, and I showed him the front of the building where there were coal chutes, so they would dump the coal through the grates in the sidewalk, it would come down and used to fuel the boilers, I thought. But he explained to me that, oh no, they also sold coal to customers, you know, it wasn't just for their own use, and no one anywhere had nowhere else I learned that.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned things from people when I walk through it and get their stories. And
yeah.
One of the things I've always wanted to do is have a StoryCorps booth where people could come in and like the niece could interview the aunt about the times that she came into A. Schwab, mm-hmm. and maybe to Beale Street, and maybe then if it, you know, ranges out to something else that was going on in Memphis. But there's plenty of those stories. But the stories, you know, every day that passes, we lose some of that history.
Yeah.
So
now, for me personally, this was my first time in the store. Right. So when I came to visit Terry in June, this was my first time in the store. Now, I do have an excuse for this being the first time in the store because, because as you listeners know, I am not a native Memphian. I've been here for now 6 years. I had just never been to a Schwab. So shame on me, but it was a great opportunity to finally be in the store. And with that, learned all about this history.
You come down on Beale Street, get whatever you wanted. Cocaine, women, music, dice. Gangsters would come down here and do their business. People come in the front door, not be able to handle their poker game. Go out the back door and straight to the funeral home. I mean, like the funeral home was that right there, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of stories about that. Mm-hmm. And I think they're probably true.
Within a few weeks, Terry texted me. It was the day after, actually, on June 11th. She said, "Throw this in the back of your brain, if you will. We have lots of museum items boxed up in the basement. I need to hire someone to catalog them. Know anyone with some voyeuristic characteristics who would like such a project? An intern, maybe." And I said, I have some ideas. And she said, I thought you might. So I took this to my board, and we talked about it a bit. And it turns out, I said to the board, let me do a little research, and let me ask around to see. So I know someone at the Pink Palace who knows a little bit about curating and archiving, and that is when I called Caroline. I emailed you.
Yeah, you sent me an email out of the blue. I hadn't talked to you in about a year and a half because of the pandemic. So I just got an email out of the blue that said, "Hey, this is Mark. I got something I want to talk to you about. You got any time?" I believe I said, "Sure, how about this afternoon?"
Yes.
And so you called me.
Yeah. And we had probably like an hour-long conversation.
We did.
Yeah. So thinking back to the conversation we had, I mean, I was asking about things like, how do you archive?
Right.
You know, what does it mean, you know?
Yeah, so I have a lot of experience in museums and in curating and in working with artifacts. And my training my academic training is as a historian. I got my master's at U of M, and I have always loved archival material. So even though I haven't worked officially as an archivist anywhere, like one of my unofficial jobs at the museum was museum archivist, and I had, you know, indexed boxes of old museum material in the library for, you know, the day in the future someone would need it.
Uh-huh.
So you're asking me all of these questions, and then I was asking you, but why? why does storyboard need to know about archiving? And you started telling me more about the project. And I was looking for a new opportunity and trying something new. And so when you asked if I wanted to meet up at A. Schwab, I was like, yeah, sure.
Uh-huh.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what I was walking into. So...
But yeah, but
so in one part down there, there's all of these boxes that are neatly stored that are on pallets. So, I mean, there's a clear place for us to start. On the other side is all of these things that used to be in the Beale Street Museum, because Schwab also had a Beale Street Museum. And so that first meeting, Elliot took us down there and talked to us about why all of these things were here, because they weren't necessarily things that would have been sold in the store.
Yeah.
And so I had a quote written down. We were walking around looking at everything, because a lot of it's like farming equipment. And he said that whenever somebody wants to donate something, his father had told him that whenever somebody wants to donate something, take it. And then Elliot was saying that a lot of the stuff is here because the Pink Palace turned it down. So museums like the Pink Palace and other organized museums have collecting plans, and you only have so much room to store things. So they'd be very particular about what they take in and what they don't. And so Schwab's became a place where if you had something old and you couldn't figure out where to put it, it's kind of this attitude of bring it to Schwab's.
Yeah.
So part of what is down there is a lot of three-dimensional artifacts. So when we talk about archives, we're talking about, or when I'm talking about archives, I'm talking about mostly paper, but things that are two-dimensional versus artifacts, which are things that are three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And I've had the great fortune to work on one of Memphis's landmarks already, right? Mm-hmm. I got a chance to I worked at the Pink Palace for 14 years and had a big hand in redoing the exhibits in the mansion. And so really excited about the chance to work on another Memphis institution that I never would have thought of. And then seeing the basement and seeing the possibilities here and the potential to tell a really untold story, because there's a lot more to Beale Street than being an entertainment district today, which, not to discount that, because it's very important to our city's economy.
Mm-hmm.
But Beale Street has a long history as an immigrant center, as a center of Black culture and life. And the whole story of urban renewal and how Beale Street, part of the reason it is still here and survived is because of A. Schwab in a big way. And so this place is much bigger than the building.
It is. And that was a big part of what attracted me to this, and obviously is what attracted you to it. But yeah, it really is, and I really didn't take this into account. Of course, I'm going to fall back on my usual excuse that I've only been here for a few years. I didn't take that into account until I really started to explore this, until we had more conversations, until I had more conversations with Terry. And realizing how important it is.
Yet they, and at one point, this building, it was basically the last place that the city didn't own. And a lot of them they owned because of back taxes. Others they, you know, made offers to people and bought them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure those people were happy to get the money. But Mr. Schwab didn't want to sell.
This is strictly our thoughts. There's no proof, there's no definitive answer with it. If we had sold out, Beale Street would be leveled. That's what they were trying to do. This building is the only building that's when it's still original.
It's interesting starting a project like this where we know where we want to go. We want to go to a full a history of this store that puts it in context of the street and the city and the times it's been through.
Mm-hmm.
But how we're going to get there and what it's going to look like and what that answer will be, we don't know.
Yeah.
And we won't know until we start going through these boxes.
Right.
Right. The story's all here.
Yeah.
And it's not just the paper things we're going to find in the archive. It's also the people who have been part of this store. Because at the end of the day, a building is just a building without the people who are inhabiting it and using it and making use of it.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I'm most excited about is the oral history component of this project and talking to Elliot Schwab. You talked, he works in the store still. So does his sister, Beverly.
Yep.
There's other people who have worked in the store. There's people who have done research on components of the store. People like Tony Kale have done a lot of research on hoodoo.
Right.
And A. Schwab is a hoodoo supplier. And so if you don't know what that is, you'll have to tune in for another episode.
For another episode. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I was just flipping through my notes from another. We came back in September and had another meeting with Terry Cox, the general manager. And just some of the things that came up that, I mean, we haven't even had a chance to really explore yet is about how the building's a she.
Yes.
We talk about her.
Yeah, right.
The hoodoo deliveries that used to clog the aisles. When there was an elevator that got put in, the delivery system that involved someone throwing things down from a rope on the mezzanine level to the first floor. What segregation looked like in the store. And the fact that Uncle Sam's ghost is still here.
That was the biggest one.
Those are not even the.
And we're not talking about Uncle Sam from the U.S.
No, we're talking government. About Elliot's Uncle Sam Schwab.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a lot here.
I was on size 2, thinking this one would be a very bad one to start on.
Or maybe be good and see what you get, the worst of it.
She could run.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
We want to keep her here, so maybe let's find another.
Already, what has emerged is not just the stories of a dry goods store that has carried on through the decades. They are the stories of how the store has been witness to key and important moments in our complex American history. How the store and the family dealt with segregation and the rioting in March of 1968. How they fought off attempts by the Memphis Housing Authority in the 1960s to take the store for urban renewal. How the store has had to adapt to generational changes in retail, from a regional general store to the current tourism market. And how shopping experiences have changed throughout the years. And how a Jewish immigrant planted roots in the heart of Black America, not as an outsider, but as an important anchor, focal point, and supporter of the community. On the next episode of the A. Schwab Basement Tapes,
I have some other books at home that are...
There's more?
Not as much as this. The neatest thing I have is the minute books. From our meetings and all. It's all the different, I mean, it's whatever the board of directors were meeting about.
Yeah.
It was, I guess, it's an awful.
You have been listening to Storyboard 30, the A. Schwab Basement Tapes, Episode 1, with your hosts Mark Fleischer and Caroline Carrico. If you have an A. Schwab story or memory you'd like to share, or if you'd like to contribute to our archive project, please visit our website, storyboardmemphis.org. Projects, and the A. Schwab Archive Project. This has been a production of StoryboardMemphis.org. Thanks to our Episode 1 sponsor, A. Schwab Dry Goods at 163 Beale Street, And thanks, as always, to producer Vance Durbin, FM 89.3 WYPL, and the Memphis Public Libraries for their continued support. And to you listeners, thank you for tuning in. And Memphis, make it a great week.